Jack climbed through the hatch in the roof of the redoubt's only functional elevator. The mutie mountain lion, his inseparable companion, stood in the car on its rear legs. Stretching up against the wall, it was almost tall enough to stick its nose through the hatch. Almost wasn't good enough. When Jack lowered his head upside down back through the hole, it stopped making the horrible noise and smiled at him.
Can you fix it?
No problem. Have to find a thing JB disconnected.
Jack withdrew again.
Found it.
Ka's people loaded all the plastic bags into the back of the car. There wasn't enough room in the elevator for everyone to ride on the first trip, so he left the stickies to wait on the top floor. The zoo muties and Jack and Christy got in with him, and they started down. Ka caught Christy staring at the explosive scorches and bullet holes that marred the inside of the car. He hadn't asked her or her ruby-eyed young friend about the dead stickies heaped in the elevator when it awaited them on the top level. He wondered about them. He also wondered why no more stickies had used the redoubt's gateway to transfer here. Though he hadn't considered the possibility of losing 99.9% of the army in its first day in the field, he had thought enough about casualties to be continuously breeding replacements. The plan had been for fresh troops to come through the gateway as soon as they were of a size suitable for combat. Even if the first batch or two of new soldiers were the ones they'd found killed in the car, more of them should have materialized. Of course, it was possible that they were trapped in the lower stories by the decommissioned elevator. Ka peeled open his third eye and had an internal look-see. He quickly confirmed the fact that there were stickies in the redoubt, but no more than 20. And as he had guessed, they were all down on the bottom floor. There should have been at least 100 of them by now. After opening a psychic connection to his lost soldiers, he showed them where to meet him. Then he squeezed his lids shut. He had no way of telling whether the white-haired boy and the red-haired female were responsible for the deaths of his troops in the redoubt. By their own admission, they had been here only days before. They had admitted to nothing else yet. When they reached the fifth floor down, the lowest level of the redoubt, a crowd of stickies was waiting in front of the elevator for them. They were most excited to see Ka, their mighty general. They wanted to touch his piebald skin, and for him to touch them. As Ka stepped out of the car, he glanced at the other side of the elevator shaft, at the car crushed by impact with the ground. It was sprinkled with stickies so dead and stiff that they might have been cardboard cutouts.
Take the bags, my soldiers, and follow.
The stickies scrambled to do as he asked, lifting the bags out and falling in behind their leader. They trooped in a ragged file back across the lower level of the redoubt, under the low acoustic tile ceiling and the banks of sputtering fluorescent lights. Ka pointed, and they deposited the bags on the floor beside the open door to the gateway. The odor of death was thick and noxious and pervaded the Matrans chamber, despite the nuke-powered air filtration system. Ka could see the soles of bare feet, already blackened by decay. The chamber door was standing wide open, which he thought could have explained why no more reinforcements had arrived. Without a closed circuit at this end, the book had said it was very dangerous to send anything living through the system. Perhaps that's why there were so many dead inside. Ka wondered if the last sticky out of the chamber had forgotten to shut the door. Stickies were capable of great thick-headedness, especially when excited. Ka stuck his head in the chamber and saw the sprawled bodies of half a dozen stickies. He knew right away that they weren't Matran's casualties, because they didn't have the telltale marks of a failed rematerialization. Incomplete heads, fingers, toes. These stickies had been hacked to death, their skulls broken apart by multiple blows by a sharp, heavy weapon, a cleaver or machete. Quite violent blows from the look of them. Two of the stickies had their arms cut off at the elbows.
Get them out of there, and get something to mop up the mess.
The blood, vomit, and excrement in the chamber was still in a semi-liquid state. Before they used the gateway again, it needed to be completely swabbed out. Either that, or they risked arriving at their destination, coated head to foot with a fine film of the stuff. The zoo muties rummaged around in the surrounding rows of desks and came up with various paper products, some more absorbent than others. They set to work inside the chamber.
Jack, what do you know about all this chilling?
Possess a damn. He didn't give us a choice.
The white-haired teen leaned over and pulled out one of his little black throwing knives from the throat of a dead sticky. He wiped off the blade on a desk blotter.
We were just trying to get out of here. Stickies didn't want to let us.
Ka looked at his Angelica, who nodded. It was the truth, and he accepted it.
I understand. You had no choice. Regrettable. But there's nothing more to be said. I want you to go up in the elevator and bring the rest of the stickies down here to me.
Can Lion come too?
If he wants to. But don't let him smack around any more of the stickies. They don't like it.
Can't blame him for that.
Jack trotted off for the elevator with the Lion at his side. When the teenager was gone, Ka took Christie's wrist and led her away from the others. She followed willingly. He pulled a chair out from a desk.
Sit, Angelica.
She sat, gazing up at him, her clear green eyes expectant.
I want to finish the conversation I started in the Apocalypticon Vault. I said that you are important to the future of the new people of Deathlands, but I didn't explain why. Now is the time for me to do so. I told you back in Willyville about my worst fear, that I might succeed in uniting our land and its people during my lifetime, but that once I die, it will all pass into chaos again.
I remember.
Good. From my study of the treasures of the Apocalypticon, I've learned of the secrets of history. There is a single key to the forging of an empire that will outlast its creator. And that is the siring of a true heir. In this case, one who carries Armageddon's gifts of the third all-seeing eye. One who believes in freedom and respect for all the mutant peoples. If a true heir does not appear to carry the standard, our noble cause is lost just as it begins.
I understand.
Angelica, you and I will give our people such a prince. A prince to lead them into the future. He will be the fruit of our coupled loins.
Does it have to be a prince?
Ka's brows furrowed in momentary confusion.
What?
Couldn't it be a princess?
Yes, of course. External sexual characteristics don't matter in the least. It is the seeing and the believing that matters, and possessing the will to complete the task.
He caught both her hands in his. They were lost between his huge palms.
I ask you, Angelica, would you bear my offspring, my prince or princess? Will you help me breathe life into my beautiful dream?
Tears rolled down Christie's cheeks. She was surprised to discover that she was no longer afraid of giving birth to a gaggle of monsters, needle-toothed or otherwise. Monsters were long-suffering, noble, ill-used, capable of greatness, as Ka had proved. Not degenerate, but evolving. If what he proposed was her destiny, who was she to question it?
It would be my honor.
She kissed the back of his hairless hand. By the time Jack returned with the stickies, the zoo muties had scrubbed out the gateway chamber and moved the plastic bags inside.
There's only room for four travelers this first jump. Angelica, you will, of course, accompany me.
I want Jack to come with us.
Yes, my love.
And a Lion?
Of course.
Ka cracked open the chamber's control panel and made a few necessary adjustments so they could reach their intended destination. Christie and Jack joined him inside the gateway, but the Lion refused to enter the chamber with them. It stood outside and swiped at the air with its paw. And when Jack wouldn't come out, the Lion tried to entice him by leaping around playfully and chasing its tail.
I don't want to leave him.
It will be all right. You'll be safe here with the others. We'll be back shortly with another group of stickies, and you can rejoin him then.
Ryan and his friends lost sight of their quarry as evening fell over the Long Valley. They had followed them down the highway for many, many hours. It was all they could do to dog their trail, They were unable to make up any of the ground that separated them because the muties kept up such a fast pace. Before they lost them in the lengthening purple shadows of the slope leading to the redoubt, Ryan and the others did get a better view of the people they were tracking, a view unobstructed by haze, glare, and mirage. It was pretty obvious to all of them that Jack and Christy were in the group, and that Ka was in the lead. He loomed so much larger than the others, they looked like children tagging along behind him. They were too far away to be able to tell if Christy and Jack were being held at gunpoint, or if they were tied or chained to the others. Ryan figured they were at least 20 minutes behind Ka, which translated into almost a 2-mile gap at their current pace. He didn't dare drive his companions any faster. He couldn't, really. They were pushing themselves as hard as they could go. If they pressed further, they wouldn't have anything left for the fight when it came to that. And he knew it would. When they neared the entrance to the redoubt, they slowed. It was always possible that they had been seen, and that Ka had left an ambush behind for them. They advanced in leapfrog fashion up to the bunker that housed the redoubt's double entrance doors. The doors were open. Ryan went in first, his G-12 up and ready. He found the passageway empty, except for the Mitsuki meatball, which stood where they had abandoned it 2 nights before. Ryan closed the distance to the armored personnel vehicle on a dead run, then peered around its rear end. He saw nothing. No rear guard, no sentries. He waved for his friends to come up. As they rounded each right-angle turn of the passage, they prepared to face the enemy. At each turn, they saw only empty space, leading up to the next zig in the road.
What do you think Ka's up to?
There's only one thing here that could interest him, and that's the Matran's chamber.
So he's gonna take his Apocalypticon and jump the hell out of here?
Wouldn't you? He's got no more army, so he can't go after the other barons around here. In fact, he's got so few troops that it'd be pretty easy pickings for even the weakest of them. I'd say he's going back where he came from, wherever that is, to regroup, to lick his wounds. Maybe to build up his forces again.
It seems what you're saying is that we can expect to do this masochism tango with the piebald man again.
Exactly. He came real close to getting everything he wanted out of Willyville. If it hadn't been for JB's pyro cocktail, he'd be on his way to Byramville by now, with his army intact. Maybe even bigger if the slaves joined up. This Ka's no stoop. You can bet he knows that he missed the gold ring by about a whisker and a half. Next time he won't be making the same mistakes. As sure as we're standing here, he's already thinking up how he's going to pull it off.
We got to stop him cold, then.
That's what I intend on doing. Get our friends back safe, and then chill the red-blasted bastard once and for all.
They kept on moving down the ramp until they came to the entrance of the first level of the redoubt. Ryan gestured for them to stay behind the edge of the opening. He poked his head out for a look-see and jerked it right back.
Stickies. Lots of them. Over by the elevator. We might have to chill them to get to it.
Hear that noise? It's the elevator. They got it running again.
Ryan peeked around the corner. When the elevator doors opened, he was pretty sure who had got the machine going again. Jack stepped out of the car and said something to the stickies that Ryan couldn't hear. The stickies weren't looking at the teenager. They were concerned about the huge lion that stood behind him. Jack waved for the stickies to join him in the car, and they did so, staying as far away from the lion as they could get. The elevator doors closed, and the arrow indicator over the lintel lit up and pointed down. Ryan stepped out of the shadows. The first level was deserted now.
Did you see that? Jack helping those sticky bastards out?
Young Jack gone over to the enemy? Oh, that's a development that pains me sorely.
No doubt about it, Doc. He fixed the elevator. He was running it for the stickies.
It doesn't mean he was doing it willingly, though. Dark night, Ryan. They could have Christy downstairs threatening to chill her if he doesn't do what Ka says.
That's true enough. I don't think we should jump to any conclusions about anyone changing their loyalties.
Excellent point, Dr. Wyeth. For all we know, the youth may be under any number of compulsions to obey the piebald man. Some of them might even be unconscious. That Ka has a hypnotic way to him.
I think it's time we took the war to Mr. Ka. Come on.
Arriving at the elevator, Ryan pushed the call button.
What if he isn't expecting more company? When the doors open, we're going to face a firing squad.
This time we're the firing squad. Just follow my lead.
The four companions had the elevator bracketed from every angle. They were greeted by an empty car. They dashed into it. Ryan punched the bottom level button.
I'm betting that Ka's made a beeline straight for the gateway.
When the car passed the fourth level down, Ryan dropped to his belly on the floor of the car. The others did the same. He double-checked his auto-rifle's round counter and then flipped off the safety. JB, Doc, and Mildred did the same with their guns.
Don't miss.
There were plenty of targets to go around. Dozens of stickies scampered around the rows of desks that lay on either side of the broad strip of gray linoleum. Muties, armed with the dead Baron's guns, stood over by the gateway. Gateway's defenders broke ranks. Stickies took off across the complex in all directions. The muties with guns also deserted their posts, scattering out of sight behind the rows of gunmetal gray desks. The one mutie who stayed behind had a bright idea. It ran for the MAT-TRANS unit.
Shit! Back me up!
Ryan got to his feet and raced across the complex. Somebody shot at him, but the bullets went high and wide, shattering a bank of fluorescent tubes to his right. Answering fire, that had to have come from Mildred, silenced the shooter. Suddenly, something big and yellow dashed across Ryan's field of view. Doc and JB both opened fire. Neither man came close to hitting the great beast. The giant lion vanished behind the rows of desks and down a hall. Ryan reached the MAT-TRANS and snatched the chamber door before it could be closed to trigger a jump. The would-be jumper, a grubby-looking swampy, held a beat-up handgun in his fist. The action of the auto pistol was locked back. The weapon was out of beams. Ryan didn't shoot him. He just reached over and grabbed the little creature by the greasy roots of his hair.
Get out!
And jerked him bodily out of the chamber. Christy fell through darkness. Her sense of rapid, uncontrolled descent didn't come from her flashing past anything stationary. The space she occupied was devoid of landmarks, beacons, signposts. It came from a sinking feeling in her gut, a rushing sensation against her skin, the fluttering wind against the tight coils of her hair. She was completely at the mercy of gravity, unable to make meaningful progress in any direction except down. The figure of a woman loomed over her, backlit by a supernova, rays of incandescent light shooting out from the tips of her writhing hair. It was Christy's birth mother, Sonia Roth.
Come here, child.
Mother Sonia's arms stretched wide to take her daughter in and comfort her. Christy tried to go to her waiting mother, but she could hardly move. She was connected to things behind her, things that held her back. Strings were tied to her clothes, her hair, her fingers, her arms, her legs, her ankles, her toes. They stretched back for miles. And knotted along their lengths every few feet along the way were objects of assorted types. Tin cans, empty bottles, cartridge casings, homemade straw dolls, hubcaps, long-playing records, sunglasses. Bright bits of rubbish fanned out as far as she could see.
Come on, child. You must hurry. We're late.
Mother, I can't. Help me.
Christy was afraid to look straight into her mother's light. Light that grew brighter as Sonia descended and came closer.
This you do not need. Nor this. Nor this.
The strings broke. And as they did, Christy realized that they weren't only holding her back, they were holding her down. She began to rise up in the air, tethered only by a few remaining lines. Behind and below her, she dragged answering machines, VCRs, candelabras, wax fruit, napkin rings, cans of paint. At her mother's touch, these too broke away. And Christy rose from a flat, dark plane, hurtling faster and faster toward distant pinpoints of light. Christy lay on the floor of the gateway chamber, with her stomach knotted in cramps. Fighting back the pain, she pushed up into a sitting position. Jack was on his hands and knees, shaking his long white hair swaying over his face. There were many black plastic bags in the chamber, and one other person. Christy had thought she'd dreamed him. He was enormous. His white skin was blotched with velvety brown patches. He was hairless and practically naked. All that covered his private parts was a knotted and filthy loincloth. Lord Khan rolled over on his back, still struggling against the after effects of the jump. His third eye was closed, but the lids had slipped apart, leaving a gap between them. Christy could see the glistening white surface of the blind orb. She backed away from the piebald mutant, as far as the chamber would allow. She could see things squirming just under the surface of his skin, worm-like creatures, crawling at high speed. Her first thought was that they had to be some kind of rad-mutated internal parasite. The smell of him in the enclosed space made her head spin. Not just rank after the normal fashion of Deathlands, but fishy and putrid, like the stickies he was always stroking so fondly. Christy wasn't exactly sure what she was doing in the chamber or how she had gotten there, but she knew that she and Jack were in great danger.
Jack! Jack!
The teenager had his forehead pressed to the floor, trying not to puke up meals he'd eaten a week ago. He was in no condition to help. Then Christy saw the neon-colored M60 lying on the gateway floor. There were no other weapons visible in the chamber, so she grabbed it. It was very heavy, and she couldn't hope to lift it, along with the attached belt of linked 7.62mm cartridges, without a surge of Gaia powers. She found the safety and moved it from safe to fire. But just then, a huge hand gripped the barrel and gently but firmly took the machine gun away from her.
You shouldn't play with that, Angelica. Joyeuse bites.
Ryan stood sentry along with Doc outside the redoubt's armory. Inside, JB and Mildred were trying to open the vanadium safe that housed the armory's baby nuke. They'd been at it for what seemed like a long time.
Sounds like a tough nut to crack, eh?
Maybe impossible.
Suddenly, far down the long hallway they guarded, a shadowy, skinny, limp figure darted from one doorway to another. The flickering of the overhead fluorescent lighting created a kind of stop-action strobe effect. Ryan braced his caseless auto rifle against the armory's door jamb and sighted across the hall from where he had last seen the sticky. With the bad light and the short distance between the doorways, a trap lead was the only way to score consistently. A trap lead and a tri-burst. The sticky bolted from the door to his left. This sticky wasn't the first. In the half hour JB had been sweating over the safe's security system, Doc and Ryan had dropped 8 or 10 stickies as the muties tried, rather clumsily, to sneak up on them.
I do believe that puts you one ahead, my dear Ryan.
Bingo!
Stay on the door, Doc.
Ryan entered the armory. JB and Mildred were staring at the open door of the safe. Both of them were grinning.
How'd you do it?
Just got lucky, I guess.
He had about a zillion connections wired up. He cross-rigged the card sensor somehow.
Feedback loop. Just takes a while, but it works every time.
Have we got a nuke in there?
JB reached into the half-height doorway and rolled out a flat, gleaming silver cylinder, bristling with electronic doodads, keypads, and readouts. The nuke had its own little wheeled gurney, complete with tool rack and ops manual. JB flipped through the loose-leaf notebook.
This was thoughtful. Hey, it's a 25-kiloton model. Crater City.
How much longer till we can make the jump?
It'll take me 15 to 20 minutes to work through this checklist, if Mildred helps me.
Sure. Just tell me what you need.
It took precisely 18 minutes for JB to prep and fuse the baby nuke. When he punched in the last code sequence, the device lit up like a Christmas tree.
We can move it now. I'm not going to arm it or punch in the time to detonation until after we've jumped and we've arrived wherever the hell we're going.
Sounds good to me. Better pick up more ammo and some grens for the trip back down to the lowest level. We still got a lot of hostiles between us and the gateway.
The trouble was, they didn't know where all the hostiles had gotten to. Even though Ryan and the others had done a sweep of the lowest level of the complex right after securing the Matrans chamber, they hadn't found a single mutie. They had vanished into the ventilation system like cockroaches under a baseboard. Ryan and JB had found a couple of duct grates torn off and some fresh blood drops inside. The escaped muties could be anywhere in the redoubt by now. Ryan and JB walked in front of the nuke on wheels. Doc and Mildred took turns pushing it and bringing up the rear. They saw a lot of stickies on the way to the elevator. None of them alive, however.
You sure know how to make a mess, Ryan.
That was one of Doc's.
Yeah? How do you know?
Did it have a head?
Not that you'd notice.
I rest my case. Doc's Lamar takes no prisoners.
Hey, Doc, we gotta get you a neater blaster.
My boy, neatness only counts in penmanship. I assure you that I am quite content with the antique blaster I have. It is a perfect match for my damnable failing eyesight and the palsied trembling of my shooting hand. A room broom.
When they reached the elevator, JB checked the roof of the car before they entered it.
It's clear. Get in. I'm staying up top in case any hostiles land up here.
Be ready.
The companions fanned out from the entrance, searching the corridor for targets.
Where is everybody?
It looked deserted, but it didn't feel deserted. Mildred scratched the back of her neck. Ryan caught her gesture, and they shared a look.
Yeah, I know. I feel it too. I think we're gonna catch it in about a minute.
JB pulled stun and frag rounds out of his pants pockets. He stacked them up on the gurney on either side of the nuke.
Help yourselves when the need arises.
They started pushing the cart away from the elevators, guns at the ready. A head popped up, way back in the rows of desks to the right. Bullets flew harmlessly overhead, then the figure dropped back down out of sight.
Gone, but not forgotten.
JB plinked off the grip safety of a fragger.
Got it.
Unfortunately, the grenade explosion acted like a call to arms for all the gun-toting muties in the level. They jumped up on both sides of Ryan and company. None of them could shoot with any degree of accuracy, but a couple of them did manage to hit one another. Ryan and the others returned. They mowed down the muties before they could duck behind the desks. Suddenly, the tile ceiling in front of them collapsed. Bunches of the naked mutants dropped through the ceiling on all sides of them. The companions backed up against the cart, each taking the corner and cut loose with everything they had.
Watch out for the empties. You could break your rad-blasted leg.
JB kicked aside a welter of brass holes that littered the floor. They pushed the cart bearing the nuke over to the entrance to the gateway. It took all four of them to lift the weapon and its cart inside. They set it down on one of the hexagonal floor plates.
Make sure your mags are full. There's no way of telling what we're jumping into.
Static electricity crackled around and around the armorglass walls. Ryan looked up and watched the fog begin to form just under the ceiling. He remembered his last jump, and for a moment, just before he sat on the floor, he felt a twinge of nameless dread. On a rustic wood-framed bed, dressed in a long cotton nightshirt, Christy braced herself to give birth.
That's it. Push now. I can almost see the top of the head.
Ryan could see nothing because Mildred was in the way. He moved closer to her and looked over her shoulder. She was right. There was the crest of his child's head. It appeared to have no hair.
Push harder.
It's coming! It's coming!
The head popped out into the light of day, face up. It had no nose to speak of, just a pair of holes in the middle of its face. Its eyes were black and dead, like a doll's. And when it opened its mouth, it had rows of little, needle teeth.
No!
With his left hand, Ryan reached over Mildred's shoulder and went for the hairless head. With his right, he grabbed the leather-wrapped handle of his 18-inch panga, which was sheathed to the back of his calf.
Ryan! No!
Before he could catch hold of the child, the half-born Sticky sank its teeth into its own mother's crotch. Christy started pounding between her legs with her fists. Blood sprayed all over the bed. Ryan shoved Mildred aside. Ryan grabbed the thing by the head and jerked it out of Christy's body. Its neck was stronger than it looked, and it didn't break. He flipped the Sticky around and held it by its ankles. It was still connected to Christy by the umbilical cord. Ryan swung the panga down in a tight arc, severing the cord in the middle. Ryan left the shallow, carrying the Sticky infant by its heels. He took it across the farmyard, under snow-capped mountains and a bright blue sky. He carried it to the pig pen, where his hogs awaited their slots.
Die!
He threw the child into the pen. Ryan came to on his knees. His head was spinning, but he knew he had to get up and get ready to fight. The lapis lazuli colored armorglass wall was no help when it came to standing. It was slicker than slick. He bit the tip of his tongue until he tasted blood. The sharp pain cleared his head, driving back the tendrils of jump fog.
Doc? Come on, Doc!
Mildred was already up. JB appeared to be awake, but just barely. Ryan gripped him under an armpit and helped him to his feet.
Bad jump.
Is there any other kind?
Yeah, dumb question.
Doc stood up on his own and brushed at the front of his frock coat's lapels. It was a fruitless gesture. What was on those lapels had been there for a very long time, and it was never coming off. Mildred peered out the chamber door's small window.
I don't see anyone outside. We better move while we can.
The room outside could have been transplanted from most of the redoubts they had visited over the years. It was standardized government issue. Low ceiling, fluorescent lights, computer banks, linoleum floor, rows of metal desks. The only thing different about this place were the piles of black plastic garbage bags lying along the outside of the chamber. Ryan untied one of the bags and poked around inside. When he drew his hand back, it was full of papers.
The Apocalypticon. It's all right here where Ka dumped it.
The glory that was Greece. The grandeur that was etc., etc., etc.
Help me get the nuke out of the chamber.
When they had lifted the device and its gurney onto the floor of the complex, Ryan lifted the plastic bag he had opened and dumped the papers out on the tile. He grabbed one of the handholds built into the side of the nuke's casing and nodded at JB.
Give me a hand here.
The two of them muscled the bomb into the center of the opened plastic bag.
Set the timer, but don't engage it yet.
JB leaned over the nuke and tapped a 9-digit access code into its keypad.
Okay, how much time should we give them?
5 minutes ought to do it.
JB input the numbers.
To engage the timer, you just hit this button once.
Got it.
Ryan poured the papers on top of the nuke. He didn't tie the top closed, but left it folded over.
Now, let's find a way out of here.
It was hard for Christy to maintain her composure with Ka sitting so close to her on the settee, knowing his plans for their imminent marriage. The veil of illusion had been lifted from her eyes. Whatever the Matran system had given to her in terms of psychic simpatico with Ka and members of the Sticky Race, it had subsequently taken it away. She remembered what she'd felt before her last jump, but she couldn't remember why. In retrospect, it all seemed like one of those fever-inspired nightmares in which the internal logic is perfect if demonic, and when you wake up, you recall that while you slept, you acted against all your waking principles, and to your shame, had a great time doing so.
Angelica, you seem distant. Are you all right?
Christy managed to smile up at Ka. She was less successful in her attempt to avoid staring at the wiry little creature that was wriggling under the skin of his cheek. She shifted her gaze to the mossy green shadows that framed his front teeth.
I'm fine.
Good. Then let's go. Everything is ready downstairs. I can't stand to wait any longer.
Offering a hand, he helped her to her feet, then guided her out of the room and down the second-story hallway.
I wish my friend and sponsor, the owner of this place, were here to witness our wedding. Pressing business called him away to another part of Deathlands. I know he'll be disappointed.
Christy wasn't listening. She walked like a pull toy on a string. As they descended a wide carpeted staircase, she saw the audience Ka had assembled for their wedding. Standing in front of the great windows of the house were a few dozen stickies, mostly immature ones, some still suckling, and Jack. Christy wanted to break away from Ka's grasp, but she didn't. It was so strange. She was reluctant to hurt his feelings, but ready to kill him if given half the chance. Jack looked apprehensive as she took her place by the window. Ka took her hands in his.
My dearest Angelica, I ask you to be my wife and the mother of my children. Will you?
I will.
We will be great together. It is fate.
There was no public kissing to seal the deal. For that, Christy was thankful. Ka scooped her up in his massive arms.
I know we will be content.
He carried her back upstairs. Again, she wasn't listening. She was trying to think of a way to escape before the marriage was consummated. He carried her into a lavish bedroom suite and gently set her down on the edge of the bed. She noticed that his huge hands were trembling and that there was a great bulge stretching out the front of his loincloth.
I've waited for this moment for such a long time. I've never been with a female before. Not ever. I've saved myself. I've saved all my seed for you.
With that, Ka ungirded his loins, and his turgid member sprang up from its confinement. He stroked himself as he stared at her.
For you. For you.
It wasn't only big, it was too big. And the hairless scrotum beneath it looked bloated and swollen, and it was drawn up tight like the bag of an aroused bull. He moved closer to her so she could touch it. Christy didn't want to be anywhere near it, but she needed to buy some time. Though she tried, she couldn't get her fingers all the way around it. And as she tried, she could feel the wire worms wriggling under the tightly stretched skin. She steeled herself to the task and caressed him once, from root to tip.
Wash first, please.
Of course. I'm sorry. I'll do it now. I'll be right back.
The moment Ka shut the hallway door, she was up and running. She opened the door cautiously.
Christy, you in there?
Jack, he nearly gave me a heart attack.
Come on, he'll be back from the bathroom any minute. Gotta get to the redoubt.
Right.
Christy and Jack sprinted down the stairs and across the Great Hall's entry room. Then, they were out the door and heading down the path toward the steam shadow.
Angelica! Angelica! Wait!
It was a downhill run all the way to the redoubt's entrance. The path was in better shape than most they'd seen. The asphalt was still intact, with no gaping holes to stumble on. Muggy clouds hung low over the road, shrouding the tropical trees, vines, and flowers. Christy and Jack's backs and heads were instantly dripping with condensed moisture. When they came to the redoubt's vanadium steel entry door, Jack punched in the entry code. They shot under the opening door. Jack tapped in the close code. The ramp they followed zigzagged to the top floor of the redoubt. Unlike the complex near Willieville, it didn't have a fleet of vehicles in cold storage. The upper floor was given over to rows of large crates and boxes, which were stacked to the ceiling in places. Christy and Jack ran down an aisle between the rows, heading for the double doors of the redoubt's elevators. Just as they skidded to a stop in front of them, the right-hand set of doors started to slide apart.
Oh, shit. Let's go for it.
Jack prepared to throw himself at whoever was inside the car. Christy was ready, too, until she found herself looking into the face of her lover.
Ryan, you're alive!
She threw her arms around him. He hugged her briefly.
Sure am.
Good to see you safe, my dear Jack.
Uh-huh. Same here. I hate to rush things, but car 2 minutes behind.
Come on!
Ryan hit the down button. The elevator descended. Christy accepted her handgun from Ryan.
Are you all okay?
Everybody's fine. Funny. But all that sticky dream stuff seems like it happened to someone else. The last jump seems to have cleared my head.
Mine too. I feel like my old self again. I wonder what happened.
Deep.
What's that, Doc?
I do not know. It just popped into my head. DEEP is an acronym for Download Error Elimination Protocol, I think. I seem to recall that it is part of the Gateway software package. It could be a replication checker.
Dark Knight, Doc, could you put it a little plainer?
I seem to recall that there was a program that shifted through the Gateway's information on you before you were actually rematerialized by the system. It checked to make sure that no mistakes were made, that everything was in sync with your DNA code. On the other hand, if it is disabled for some reason, then I suspect errors can creep in.
So when we went back through the Mattrans system, it automatically removed the stuff we got from the stickies?
I do believe that was what happened. Are we still going to nuke this place?
Nuke it?
JB busted into the nuke safe at the other redoubt. We got a live baby nuke waiting down by the gateway chamber. You have a problem with that?
No problem. It's something that has to be done. It's just that with all the rad poison that's already all over Deathlands, I hate to add more. That madness was supposed to have ended 100 years ago.
As soon as they stepped out of the car on the lowest level, the elevator doors closed on their own.
It's going back up. That's gotta be Ka. We better get a move on.
They ran to the piles of plastic bags beside the gateway chamber.
That's the Apocalypticon.
It's more than that.
Ryan folded down the top of one of the bags, exposing the armed nuke.
JB, is this the button here?
Yep, hit it.
Ryan pressed the keypad, and a set of numbers appeared in the LED readout. It began a 5-minute countdown. Ryan pulled up the sides of the bag and tied it closed.
What about all this stuff? Shouldn't we take some of it with us?
No time for that. We've got to be out of here before Ka reaches the Matrance unit.
They scrambled into the chamber, and JB punched the LD button, which would send them back to the Willyville Redoubt. Ryan pulled the door closed. The scent of ozone trickled through the chamber. Ryan watched through the clear armor-glass window. He saw Lord Ka rush in. The mutant was naked except for his combat boots, and he carried an M60 machine gun. That was the image Ryan carried as he fell into unconsciousness. Lord Ka jerked open the Matrance door. There was nothing inside. Only a few wisps of mist remained.
Angelica! Angelica! Why did you do this to me?
He slumped to the floor of the chamber, dropping Joyeuse by his side. He had read of females who betrayed and teased. The legends were full of them. Beautiful women with wiles that mesmerized and vanquished even the most valiant and steadfast of Charlemagne's heroes. Had Angelica in reality been one of those deceptive, cunning creatures?
Why didn't I sense it? Up until the moment she made her escape, I was certain that she shared my feelings and my dreams. What am I to do now? Pursue her to the ends of the earth? That's what the heroes of legend did. They put aside all other concerns and chased after the lady loves who had rejected them. But it seems such an empty quest, more suited to a willful and wild paladin than a wise and respected leader. Charlemagne's life teaches me that. But I can't deny the pain in my heart. It's exactly as I imagined it. And this hurtful is what I felt at the death of my own loyal troops. How do I reconcile this equality of pain? Though Angelica has not died, my sense of loss is no less. Twice in a single day, a victory that I have longed for has been snatched from my grasp. Vengeance. I want revenge against the imposter Angelica, but only on my terms. I will not spend time and energy chasing her down now. To do that would mean giving up my plans for the rebuilding of my army. No. I will wait to taste vengeance. Once I have the troop strength up, much wiser for the mistakes I've made, I'll resume my campaign against the Eastern Barons. Eventually my path and hers will cross again. And then I will make her
Ka got up and looked at the gateway chamber's control panel. The LD button was still clicked in. She and the boy had jumped back to Willyville.
So much the better. They may still be in the vicinity when I return in a week or two with fresh troops.
He turned and regarded the Stickies who had followed him down from the mansion. They were the nucleus of his new army.
What's that sound?
It seemed to be coming from the pile of trash bags. Ka knelt over the heap and quickly located the source of the sound. He ripped open the bag and stared dumbfounded at the domed top of a mini-nuke and the countdown readout. The numbers had fallen to 48, 47, 46. The piebald creature leapt to his feet. There was no time to explain the situation to the Stickies, no time to peel back his lid and show them the kind of help he required. Ka began to grab the black plastic bags and throw them over his shoulder into the gateway chamber. There were a lot of bags, and he didn't have much time to work. In a fury, he moved the Apocalypticon from the floor to the heart of the chamber. The stickies huddled together outside the chamber uneasily. They didn't understand his agitation, and it alarmed them. He had to stop. Even though there were still precious documents outside the chamber, he knew it would take time to reprogram the controls and for the system to cycle up for transfer. He couldn't risk just hitting the LD button again. There was no telling what kind of welcoming committee Angelica and her friends would have waiting for him. He wasn't an expert at running the gateways yet, but he knew how to switch the system to automatic, which meant that once the chamber powered up, he would be sent at random to the nearest available Matrans unit, and that meant he could end up well away from Ground Zero. He tripped the automatic sequencer and leapt through the door. As he reached for the door handle, he looked at his stickies, clustered there with the remaining plastic bags. How could he turn his back on them? 10 seconds. Ka opened his third eye, and the stickies jerked. He sent one image into their mutant brains, a moving picture of them running, diving through the chamber door. As the last sticky hurled itself over the portal, Ka slammed the door shut. He glared out the window at the device that stood only a few yards away. It was close enough that he could see the readout. He knew he had waited too long. The second jump in such a short time took its toll on Ryan and the others. It left them shaky and disoriented. They sat on the hexagonal floor plates with their backs pressed against the armaglass wall, trying to catch their breath.
Do you think we got him?
If the nuke detonated, I saw him come running out of the elevator right before everything went black. If it detonated, there's nothing left of that redoubt. Probably took out half the mountainside with it.
Mildred opened the chamber door. She had her ZKR 551 target revolver out in front of her.
Don't see any more stickies. It looks all clear to me.
They exited the gateway, and once outside, stretched and loosened their cramped muscles.
You see a big, muted mountain lion around here?
Yeah, we saw it. It was a blur going that way.
You didn't chill it.
We tried, my dear boy, but we missed by more than a mile.
If you're thinking about getting reacquainted with it, maybe you'd better think again.
Why?
Because you aren't the same critter it licked up and down a few hours ago. You've lost something that you were never supposed to have. It might not find you such a good companion anymore.
Yeah, might find it likes you more as lunch.
I'm not afraid of him.
Seriously, Jack, you'd be taking a big risk if you let that cat get close to you again.
Not around here, so not a problem.
Probably took off up the ventilation system. He's out there, roaming Deathlands by now.
Fine with me. Desires to be free anyway.
It was night outside. The moon was already high in the sky, a disk of polished bone. A soft, warm breeze ruffled their clothes.
Smells good out here.
Yeah, clean.
Did you ever in your life see so many stars?
Ryan put his arm around Christy's slender waist, his fingers finding the rounded curve of her hip. She leaned against him, and as she did, strands of her hair uncoiled to softly brush his cheek.
Where to now, Ryan?
I don't know. Maybe we should take a hike over to Byramville.
Why would we want to go there?
I'm just thinking that we don't know if we chilled Ka. Nuke could have been a dud. Maybe we should head on up the Barrens Road and have a talk with Blackheart Hutton. Then maybe go on and visit the other Barrens around here.
Ryan, we practically got ourselves chilled the last time we tried to warn them.
Yeah, didn't believe us then. Why would they believe us now?
Because of that.
Ryan pointed way down the valley, under the glittering field of stars. Almost on the horizon line, something glowed red-orange.
That's Willyville?
Still burning. Everybody within 50 miles of that tower is going to know something bad went down. We don't have to prove anything this time.
You're right. It is a good idea. If Ka isn't dead, he's going to be back this way sooner or later.
I don't think it's a good idea, but I'll go along with it because I'm too tired to argue.
Count me in as well.
Then it's settled.
A few hours later, when the company stopped to rest, Ryan and Christy slipped away from the others. Until they kissed, there was still a strangeness between them. Once their lips touched, however, The old magic returned in a rush.
Oh, I missed doing that.
Her palm pressed flat against the bulge of his crotch, gently but insistently rubbing him to life.
Missed this, too.
Wait a minute.
He lifted her hand from him and kissed the center of her palm.
I want to talk to you about something first. It's something I should have told you about a long time ago. What Elijah said about me was true. I did run that op that killed a bunch of muties during the Battle of Coopville. It wasn't because I was young and wild, or because I lost any friends to the muty rebels' blasters and blades. I was a true, cold-heart killer, and that massacre made me see myself. It scared me. Deep. I'm sorry I didn't tell you before. I couldn't. How could I tell you about it when I couldn't face up to it myself? Until that real bad jump we had with the stickies in the chamber, I couldn't make myself look at what I'd done. I guess because I was afraid that I might do it again.
That won't ever happen. You're too strong to let it.
I think you're right. I know I'm not worried about it anymore.
Come here, lover.
Christy put her hands on Ryan's shoulders and pulled him close. She unzipped the front of her jumpsuit and put his hand inside.
Oh.
Ryan brushed her nipples with the backs of his knuckles, gently bumping them over the rising tips. Christy stood still for this teasing caress, only for a moment. Ka felt neither the heat nor the flash of the nuke. That was because, technically speaking, he was no longer inside the Matrens chamber when the device detonated. A few nanoseconds before the explosion, his molecules, as well as the molecules of all the living and inanimate contents of the gateway, had been mapped and deconstructed, and the information necessary for reconstruction prepared for transmission. At the instant of thermonuclear ignition, the data was already cycling through a back loop on the planet straddling Matrens pathway. It was in a holding pattern until the computer selected its random final destination. The automatic system had been designed to operate that way, so it could accommodate thousands of nearly simultaneous transmissions without rematerialization overlay. A final electronic handshake between destination and departure point was required before the transfer was effected. Therein lay the glitch. A nanosecond post-blast, there was no longer a departure point for any one of the hundreds of possible destination gateways to connect to. Encoded and perpetually en route, Ka's DNA sequence, his brainwave pattern, the three-dimensional structure of his every cell, surfed the Cerberus network, going nowhere in particular, at the speed of light. And as it hurtled around and around, Ka's digitized simulacra dreamed a dream that had no discernible beginning or end. He appeared to tumble through a black void, and as he fell, thin objects fluttered all around him, like leaves, only rectangular and white. There was an endless supply of them, and they flicked past him so quickly that he couldn't tell one from another. There was no pattern to their coming and going, no repeating shifts in their density or direction. It was all perfectly, horribly random, which was why he couldn't tell the past from the present, or the present from the past. No end, no beginning. Out of desperation, he fumbled for the flaps of his third eye and peeled them back. He looked inward, hoping for a glimpse of something he recognized. Even his worst nightmare was preferable to this. But the view inside was the same as the view outside. A timeless black waste. Millions of sheets of paper whipped by a silent whirlwind. And Ka falling.
Deathlands Skydark is a Graphic Audio production.